Parshat Shmini. Ahi Bayom Shmini. There is a fascinating topic, difficult topic, that we're going to get into tonight. And I'll be honest with you, I think I've come to what the problem is. I'm not 100% sure I'm sure what the solution is. And maybe this week it's less about coming up with an answer and more about struggling with a question. Some years ago, I ran into an old friend. He was involved in a somewhat controversial project, believe it at that. And like me, he was a Talmid. I think he was much more of a Talmid. Tremendous Talmud Chacham. Of Rav Lichtenstein. And he had started a pretty controversial program. I'm not going to debate that. I'm not going to talk about what the program was or the merits of it, because I don't want anybody to imagine that they think they know who this is. So we were talking, and you know, I started asking about this project he was involved in. And at one point, they said to him, you know, what does Rav Lichtenstein think about this? Like, I was pretty surprised that he would sort of begin such an endeavor, being a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein. And his response to me was, oh, I'm way beyond that. With a smile. And even though I have high regard for this person, and respect his Torah, and it was like, I had no idea what to say. And I couldn't even put my finger, excuse me, on what was bothering me. And I went home, and I told my wife about it. And I said, like, I was shocked by the comment, and I didn't know what to do with it. And it took me a while to understand what bothered me. And it started with a question. How much do we owe the Rabbanim in our lives? At what point is it healthy to become independent of someone that you view as your Rav, your Rebbe? Should we be adhering to everything our Rebbe says? If we're not adhering to whatever it is our teachers, our Rabbanim are saying, then are they really our Rabbanim? And is that necessarily a good thing or a bad thing? And on the one hand, it's healthy. I mean, I have a vivid memory in yeshiva. I don't remember exactly at what point it was, but at some point, possibly as a result of the Camp David Accords, peace treaty with Egypt, the decision on the part of Begin's government to give away or give back, depending on your perspective, portions of Sinai, the whole Sinai, including areas that had become settled by Jews, you know, Yitzhashrut Yehudit, Yamit, Atzmona, places that were Yishuvim L'Tiferet. I'm not talking about the practical issue, but just the existential issue, the principles issue. And there was a group in Yeshiva, and not only in Gush, but I'm just using Gush as the example. There were two big issues that came up. One was because we were in the middle of the Lebanon War, and we went up into Lebanon, and we reached pretty far up to the Beirut-Damascus Highway. And pretty much across the board, if you look at the map in the Karta of Dat Mikra, if you study the different postgame, it's pretty clear that north of today's border with Lebanon was still an area that was promised to Shivtei Israel. People started talking about Eretz Yisrael HaShlema, that we're taking back Shevet Naphtali and part of Asher, and this should now become part of Eretz Yisrael. And I remember both Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital had a very strong reaction to this. For practical reasons as well as principled reasons, they were vehemently against it. And one thing led to another, and the next thing, they were getting involved in a political movement that was interested in talking about peace and possibly accepting halakhically the possibility, at least, of giving up land to Arabs. And there was a group in yeshiva that was really upset about this. This is our yeshiva, but, you know, do we stand for this? And do we want this? And some boys put up a petition on the bulletin board. You know, if you feel that this is inappropriate, that lalacha, this rav and that rav and this rav says that you can't give back, you know, Shetach, Rav Tzvi Yehuda says, and Rav Eliyahu says. And then there was a counter group that got really upset. How could boys put up a petition in the yeshiva that disagrees with the Rosh Yeshiva? And I remember on two separate occasions, both of Amital and of Lichtenstein took a very strong reaction to this. And they felt that it's healthy that people should have their own opinions. And I remember Amital says, just because I vote one party doesn't mean you're obligated to vote one party. And just because I have a principled decision doesn't mean you have to accept the principled decision. And yet, so I can say very clearly, Lo tasuru ma'asherim luchayim minusmal. You have to listen to what Chazal say. The Mishnah Perkevus is a selech harav. You have to have a teacher. You have to make for yourself a Rebbe. Where is the balance? How much do we owe and how much not do we owe? At what point, if a Rav says something, should it be the Holy Grail? And at what point is it healthy that if a Rav says something that we value? You know, here at Oraita, on the one hand, I love the fact that there are different Rabbanim, and the different Rabbanim sometimes have different opinions, and that, we're not really, we don't regularly issue proclamations demanding that everybody do exactly what we say. You know, you want to wear a black kippah, you want to wear a white kippah, you want to wear a bar mitzvah kippah, whatever it is, right? On the other hand, are there points at which, you know, if your Rabbanim say something, then that's it. And where is that point? Right? If you come to shul on Shabbos and yeshiva, and you're not wearing a white shirt, and yeshiva says, we want you to wear white shirts. Now, it's not a halacha to wear a white shirt. It's a halacha to wear big day Shabbat, and even that you can discuss what it is. But I would be hard-pressed to say that if you're wearing a nice button-down shirt like this, that you're over on Easter, that you're... And yet, Libriot, if you walk into yeshiva, and the yeshiva wears a white shirt, and the Rabbanim say wear a white, and you don't wear a white shirt, are you disrespecting your Rabbanim? Are you undermining your Rabbanim? And I ask this as a question. I'm not taking a dig. Now, why does this whole topic come up? Because this week has, in Parshat Shemini, one of the most difficult stories in the entire Torah. And that's the story of Nadav and Aviv. We're going to talk about this on Yom HaShoah, so we're not going to get into understanding the tragedy. But to make a long story short, this is the Yom Chanukat HaMishkan. It's the eighth day. Moshe Rabbeinu, and with him the Kohanim, Elazar, Itamar, Nadav, Avihu, and of course Aaron, who's about to become Kohen Gadol, have been putting together the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the morning, going through the Avodat Hayom, all of the service of the day, the Korbanot, the Ketoret, and everything else, and taking it apart at night. And then the next day, doing it again. And then the next day. And on the eighth day, they put it together, and Moshe Rabbeinu steps back, and Aaron becomes the Kohen Gadol, and they don't take it apart. And now the Mishkan is the Mishkan. And they dedicate the Mishkan, and in the midst of this incredible ceremony, this once in Jewish history ceremony, Nadav and Aviv do something. And it's not clear what they do. Right? The Pasuk says, in Perek Yud, sorry, Vayikchu v'nei Aaron Nadav ve'Avihu, and the sons of Aaron, Nadav and Aviv, they each take ish machtato, they take a censer, it's like a sort of a long spoon in which you hold either ash or coals, right, to burn something. And they put the incense, the spices on it, put a flame to it. And they offer up a fire, which is a strange fire. That's an interesting question, what that means. But it doesn't seem to be something they were commanded to do. And a fire comes from before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the way, this doesn't necessarily mean, everybody assumes this means a fire from heaven. I don't think it's a fire from heaven. If you study the Psukim, when the Torah was burned, the fire came from the Kodesh Kadashim outwards and consumed the Mizbech HaKtoret, which was right opposite it, the incense. But that's a detail. It's a detail. And it consumes what's on the Mizbech, Ve'yamutu Lifnei Hashem, and they die. So put aside for the moment the enormity of this tragedy and the leadership that was lost. Nadav and Aviv were Talmidim Muvhakim of Moshe Rabbeinu. If you look in Perek Chav Dalet in the 24th chapter in Shemot, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up on Har Sinai, and he's up on top of the mountain, who's partway down the mountain below him? Who? I can't hear you. Nope. No. Who does he run into? Yoshua. Who's at the bottom of the mountain, sort of 2 kilometers away? It's the basis of Tchum, Bnei Israel. Who's at the foot of the mountain? They're on the higher level. The Zkenim. And who's in between Yeshua and the Zkenim and the elders? Nadav and Aviv. Nadav and Aviv. No, Aaron is down below. That's an interesting question. Nadav and Aviv. Nadav and Aviv were obviously being groomed. They were the future leadership of the Jewish people. They were up there with Yeshua. So the loss of such leadership is unbelievable. It's Menachem Zemba in the Warsaw Ghetto times 1,000. So the question becomes, we're going to talk about on Yom HaShoah how this could happen, how you deal with tragedy. But the question becomes here, what exactly went wrong? What did they do wrong? And what's interesting is that the rabbis are very much divided on this topic. Without much difficulty, you could find 14 different opinions as to what they did. Between the Gemara and the Midrashim and the Rishonim. Shtuya Yayin Hayu, they were drunk. Rav Shimshon and Rafael Hirsch, they got caught up in the passion of the moment and they wanted to bring another carbon. But the one that fascinates me the most is quoted by Rashi from the Gemara in Erevin. And I'm going to read you from the Torah Tumimah. Tanya Abilezer Omer, Lo metu bnei Aaron, the sons of Aaron did not die, ad shehoru halacha b'fnei Moshe. Whoever is the Kosh. Right? Ad shehoru halacha b'fnei Moshe Rabban. Until they taught halacha in front of Moshe. Umay drush, and what exactly did they do? V'natnu bnei Aaron eish al mizbeach. It says in the first parak in Vayikra that they gave up, they put a fire on mizbeach. They lit mizbeach. Amru afal pi she'eish yoredet min ha'shamayim, mitzvah lavi min ha'hedyot. Even though we know that fire is supposed to come from heaven and consume the sacrifices that are on the altar, that are on the Zbeach, they felt that you should also bring eish min ha'hedyot, right? You should also, the Kohenim themselves should also bring a fire. In other words, there's the holy fire that comes from Hashem, and there's the human fire that comes from us. So they said, you have to bring, now, the Pasuk says, right? V'natnu bnei Aaron eish l'mizbeach. So if they're killed for doing this, so obviously that wasn't the halacha. But if you look in the Rambam, where do you think you would find this, by the way? Where would you find this? Where in the Rambam? What's safer? What's safer? Avoda, right? Okay, these are the korbanot. Okay? This is in the halacha of Tzmidin Musafin. Okay? This is Perek Bet Halacha Aleph, very easy to find. Mitzvah tasei liot eish yikuda al mizbeach, right? The eish mizbeach tukad bo, right? There has to be a constant fire on mizbeach, right? Tamid, always. Shenemar eish tamid tukad al mizbeach. Afapi, right? You always have to have fire stacked, wood stacked, and you also have to fire burning. Afapi she eish yarda min hashamayim, and even though fire came from heaven, mitzvah lavi eish min ahedyot, shenemar v'natnu bnei aron according to eish al mizbeach. There's a mitzvah for the Kohanim to bring a fire because there has to be fire in the Mizbeach. So the Rambam paskins, based on the Pesukim and based on the Gemara, that this is halacha. So what another one of you said was correct. They actually correctly suggested what halacha was. So what's the problem? The problem isn't that they said something incorrect. They actually said the correct thing. They did the correct thing. But they were mora halacha bifnei rabo. And just so you understand how serious this is, Gemara and Erevin, this is, by the way, a fascinating sugya. There are 2 sugyot and shas that deal with this topic. How far does the authority of the rabbi extend? Are you allowed to paskin lalacha? Am I allowed to paskin lalacha if Rav Lichtenstein is my rav? And I want to rule halachically. Shouldn't I be asking of Lichtenstein? Is there a difference between if I'm in yeshiva or just in a lunch food? Is there a difference if I'm in a frat or in yeshiva? Is there a difference if I'm in Yerushalayim? Is there a difference if I'm being mora halacha in general, ruling on something in general, or perhaps if it's a case where I'm telling somebody not to do something where they're going to be over nisur? There are a lot of different discussions about when I'm allowed to, when I'm not allowed to. And the Gemara here in Erevin on Daf Samach Gimel 63 has a whole discussion about this. There's another Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Hey, right? But listen to this piece, okay? Who is the author of this opinion that Nadav and Aviyu, their great mistake was that they ruled halachically. They gave a legal ruling in front of their Rebbe. Or by the way, not at all clear that they were in front of their Rebbe, but their Rebbe was there. Their Rebbe was around. He was still alive. They were in his jurisdiction, right? So this is... By the way, Rava is quoted here in the Gemara. There are two interesting things to mention here. One is, Kol makom sheyesh bo chilul Hashem in cholkin kavod l'rav. Even if your Rav is there, and you should defer to his opinion, but if you have a chance to prevent a chilul Hashem, a desecration of Hashem's name, then you don't have to worry about kavod l'rav. Somebody's about to do something, and you realize it's going to be a chilul Hashem, right? We just had this today. What happened today? Oh, we were waiting in line for the cable car. And there was like an older woman. Some of you were with me. There's an older woman. And she was like standing trying to get through the line. Nebuch, she looked like she was a Holocaust survivor. She looked like 90 years old. And there's a long line for the cable car. And if you remember, there's one line going in and then there's an empty way to come out. So I helped her to get through whatever it is, right? And so somebody as a joke said, you know, we could use her and get all the way to the front of the line, right? And I was just, I'm walking the old lady, right? Except you got to keep on your head. It's a little bit of Chil Hashem. So what if I start doing that? And one of the Talmidim sees that you're doing that and they think it's a Chil Hashem. So cover a Rav, you don't say anything. So according to Rava, when it comes to Chil Hashem, there's no cover a Rav. You find a way to say it, you tell the Rav, you shouldn't be, it's Chil Hashem. Do it. Whatever it may be. Okay. And then the Gemara goes on. And it says, Bifanav Asur V'chayev Mita, if you're Mora Halacha, in front of your Rav, in other words, you're paskening Halacha correctly. Somebody says to you, are we allowed to shower on Yom Tov? And you know the sugya, and you know the halacha, and you know what to say. But Rav Blau is standing there. And you do this in front of him. You tell him the halacha correctly. You're not only is it asur, is it forbidden, but you're chayav misa. You deserve to die. That's unbelievable. And Rava says, shalom b'fanav asur v'ein chayav misa. But if you do it, and it's not in front of him, right? You know, you're doing it in the Beis Medrash, and he's not here that day. But still, he's your Rav, and you should be deferring to him. So that's us. You're not allowed to do that. Interesting question. V'hatanya Rabbi Lezer Omer. So the Gemara says, "Shelo b'front of Lo." And if you're not in front of him, if you're passing legal judgment, but you don't have to be in front of your Rebbe, that's not punishable by death. But we learned in a Brisa, Rabbi Lezer Omer, "Lo metu bnei Aaron at shehoru alacha b'fnei Moshe Rabban." My darush v'natnu, what we just quoted in Rashi. Now listen to this. This is Rabbi Elazar. V'talmid echad hagalo Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar had a student. Shehore halacha b'fanav. And he ruled on a halacha in front of Rabbi Elazar. Amar Rabbi Elazar le'ima shalom ishti. I love this, by the way. He went home to his wife. His wife's name apparently was Ima Shalom. I'm going to think about that all night. Okay? But that was his name. He married a woman who's mommy peach. Think about that, but all right. So he says to his wife, Tameani, I highly doubt im yotzi zeshnato, if this boy is going to live out the year. Because he was mora halacha bifnei rabo. Right? Falo hotzi shnato. And he didn't live to the end of the year. He died. So amra lo. Now you got to understand, the wife, you know, if I came home and I told my wife, that boy is going to die, she'd be free. She would never hear me say anything like that. So she would remember that. So when he died, she obviously remembered it. So she, Amra lo naviyata? Are you a Navi? Are you a prophet that you could know he's going to die? Amra lo naviya nochi v'lo ben navi. I'm not a prophet. I'm not the son of a prophet. El lakach mekublani. This is what I received from my teachers. Kol amore halacha b'fnei rabo chayev mita. If a person gives over a halacha, passes a legal ruling in front of his teacher, he is punished by it. What is going on? Did you guys breathe dust or something? Unbelievable. Winter's over, guys. Right? Now this is unbelievable. Does this even mean? First of all, we know, the Gemara tells us, Rav mochel al kvodo, kvodo machel. A Rav can be mochel on his covered. He could say, you know what, sit in my seat, it's okay. If a Rav lets you sit in a seat, you can sit in a seat. If your father lets you sit in your seat, can you sit in your seat? No. Yes, you can. Av mochel al kvodo, kvodo machel. Right? If a father wants to give up on his honor, he's allowed to. Melech mochel al kvodo, en kvodo machel. The melech, the king, who's representative of Kosh Baruch Hu, can't do it. It's an interesting question why a Rav can do this. But this is passing. By the way, The Rambam, I happen to have my handy dandy Rambam here, in Hilchos Talmud Torah says as follows. If you look up, by the way, if you haven't studied Hilchot Talmud Torah as a Ben Torah, you're missing something. You should study these halachas. It's very simple to study these halachas, right? So the Rambam says like this, right? First of all, the Rambam defines, there's a whole discussion, who's your Rav? If I have a first grade teacher, he taught me Aleph Beis, and I barely remember anything, and he walks into the room, he's my first grade teacher. I vaguely remember, maybe he taught me a lesson. He's not my Rebbe. Do I have to stand up for him when he walks into the room? Absolutely, right? If you haven't learned most of your wisdom from this Rebbe, you're not chayav covering all these things. But you have to stand up for him. Okay. And you should tear in mourning when he passes away. Even if you haven't learned from him one thing, Ben katon, ben gadol, whether when you were little, whether it was a little thing or a big thing, or made milfanav v'chule v'chule. Harav ha-muvhak. Now, if you have a rav who's your rav muvhak, this is a person that you grew in Torah from, whose Torah you imbibed from, and who you would ask today for psak halacha. Right, so I grew up learning Torah from Rav Riskin. I'm in Chinuch because of Rav Riskin. He would be a Rav Muvak, Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Amital. Right? Harav Muvak sheratzal limchol al kvado b'chol v'mailu b'achad min l'chol kavidav l'achad min harashut b'yadav. Even if Rav Lichtenstein wants to be mochel on his cover, and he says, no, it's okay, please, sit in my seat. You're allowed to. V'af al pi she'machal chayav ha-talmid l'hadro. But even though he was mochel on his cover, even though he gave up on his honor, you still have an obligation to show him respect, to be mahader him, to be very concerned about being honoring him, etc. Because he's your rav. So which is it? How do we find this balance? Right? Why is this so critical? And what's really interesting is if a rav can be mochel on his cover, then Rabbi Elazar has a student who's mara halacha in front of him. He said a halacha, and Rabbi Elazar says he's going to die. So why doesn't Rabbi Elazar just mochel on his cover? Why doesn't he just say, I don't, it's okay? Now there's two possibilities. One possibility is Rabbi Elazar could have been mochel on his cover, but he didn't because there was a principle at stake. And the other possibility is that when you pasken halacha in front of your rav, it's not about the rav, it's not his cover that's the problem. There's some bigger issue at play here. There's a principle. What is this principle? So I just want to share with you an idea and raise with you an issue that I do not have the answer to this question. You know, I saw an interesting vort in the name of Moshe Feinstein, which I mentioned to you, some of you previously. In Parshat Tzav, it says, right, Daber el Bnei Aaron, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally tells Moshe, speak to the sons of Aaron, to the Kohanim, right? And command the Kohanim what to do, Hilchos Kuna. In Vayikra, which is the first parsha, which precedes Parsha Tzav, then it says Vayikra Hashem al Moshe, right? Daber al Bnei Yisrael. Okay, and what does then it proceed to do? To list the halachot, the korban, all the different korbanot, Torah's korban. So Vayikra is called Torah's korban. So the obvious question is, why in Vayikra does the Torah speak to the entire Jewish people, and only in Parsha Tzav do we finally command the korban? So I heard quoted in the name of Moshe Feinstein. I couldn't find this in Darash Moshe. I thought that's where it was. I'm not sure where it is. He says an interesting thing. He says, before we can appoint educated leaders, we need to educate ourselves. First, Am Yisrael has to learn Torah. And then they'll be discerning enough to be sure that their leadership is well-versed in Torah. And it's not an accident that Torah communities produce Gedolei Torah. And communities that don't have a lot of Torah, their leaders are not Gedolei Torah. They're not giants in Torah. Because if you don't know anything, your Rebbe only has to know a little more than nothing. And it's interesting. And it got me thinking, beyond the question of being Mora Halacha Bifnei Rav, what happens when I pasken Halacha in front of a witness? What happens is that we lose the awe we lose the fealty. We lose the sense of Rabbanus. That this rabbi is the arbiter of all halacha for me. And it's interesting that if you look at the story of Nadav and Avihu and you look how the Gemara reacts to it, that's a principle in Judaism. You know? Do you have a Rav? Do you have a Rav whose word is law? If Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was to call me up, you know, it doesn't bother me at all in Rosh Hashanah. It saddens me, actually, that in many of the women's seminaries, they don't have a Rosh Hashanah program for them. I understand it. You have to get a minyan. It's complicated. So these girls have nowhere to go. So they don't know where to go. So over the years, more and more girls from local yeshivot, midrashot, have heard that we have a nice tab, and they show up here. And we have to find a way to make sure there's a big enough mechitza, and what are the wives of their babe do, and so on and so forth. And I think that not only is it mutol lalacha, I actually think it's a good thing. Okay. And so far, over the years, the Oraita boys have not taken advantage of this, and we've still managed to maintain the special atmosphere of Rosh Hashanah, despite the fact that there might be 30 girls from a midrashah in the back. But if Rav Lichtenstein called me up and said, listen, I hear that girls from Midreshet Chvesnisht are in the yeshiva in Rosh Hashanah, I don't think you should do it. I think it's halachically problematic. You shouldn't do it. That would be it. A sign would go up the next morning. Right? If Rav Nevensal had told me, and he's not my Rebbe Mufa, if Rav Nevensal had told me that all the boys in the yeshiva should be keeping 2 days Yom Tov, then that's what we would do. That's what we would do. Adayom. You could debate whether we're blessed that he said one day. But Adayom. Do we have that? Now, you know I don't like these labels, but just for the purpose of this discussion, if you go into the Haredi world and you ask the average Jew if he has a Rav, he'll tell you who his Rav is. If he has a question in Psak, he knows who to go to. And if that Rav issues a ruling, then that's it. I've met people who absolutely believe that Tchelis makes sense. They can quote you the Rishonim, the Achronim backwards and forwards, but their Rav doesn't wear Tchelis. So that's it. Do we have that? Should we want that? Do you have that? Now, don't get me wrong. There's a very fine line. I don't think that before you buy a washing machine, you have to ask your Rav whether you should get the washing machine. Which neighborhood you want to move into, does the Rav tell you should move into this one or that one? Hey, it might be good to get advice from your Rav, but I don't think that's the job of the Rav to paskin. That's Das Torah, Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Amitai used to speak out against this. I'm not talking about that. But to know that there's a Rav, and I think what bothered me about that conversation, I wasn't sure if this fellow wasn't asking Rav Lichtenstein because he knew Rav Lichtenstein would tell him something that was proper that he didn't want to hear. Or if he no longer accepted Rav Lichtenstein as his Rav. And I started thinking about how does that happen? Now, unfortunately, in the last 10 years, we've been, maybe 20 years, we've been witness to a number of instances where Gedolei Torah proved to be not such Gedolei people. And accused and indicted and sometimes convicted. And, you know, I still think it's the exception to the rule, but I think that undermined the maybe your generation, certainly here in Israel's perception that a Rav is a Rav unfailingly. And I think that's a terrible thing. And I'm not sure how we get that back. But it's clear that what the Torah is telling us here is that we can't lose this. Because a Jewish people without rabbinic authority will not survive. Without Torah, what are we? We're nothing. And I wonder how you find that in your lives. Because I had the pleasure, the privilege of being in yeshiva for 9-10 years. So if you learn Torah from someone for 9-10 years, they're going to become your Rav. Or you're going to discover that they're not your Rav and you'll find another Rav. But if you learn for a year, and really it's 6-7 months, can you develop that relationship? And I want to tell you something, and we'll finish with this. There's 400 alumni now of Oraita. When you finish next year, we'll have 500. It's not possible for the Rabbanim here, how many of us are there, 9, 10, to run after every student. And the nature of things is that you'll be closer with some and not with others, not because you want to be closer to some, but because some of the students will make the effort. If you feel that I mean, we're a week away from the end of Chorus, man. If you feel that you've discovered a personality in your life that can be your Rav, then you have a chiyuv, you have a responsibility to make sure that one day, when you're 40 years old, and your son wants to get married, you know, that he has a Rav in his life because you had a Rav in your life. When you want to get married, there's nothing sadder. It happens every year. I'll get a call from someone who has a friend and they're getting married and they don't have any rabbis and they don't know who to marry them and they heard I do a nice wedding. Would you do the wedding? And it breaks my heart because if I answered yes to everyone, I would never have. But it's heartbreaking that a couple will get married and they don't have a Rav. And you can't wake up one morning when you get married and say, you know what, why don't we call up? Do you have a Rav in your life? If you love Torah and you find a model that can be that person for you, then I think there's a goal to get to a space with a particular Rav in your life, whoever that is, and that person is Mora Halacha for you. And in that case, you would never be Mora Halacha b'fanav. Because by doing that, you would be undermining the fact that the authority of that halacha comes from him. And why is it important that authority of that halacha comes from him? Because it doesn't really come from him, it comes from his Rebbe. The halacha, as little bit of it that I know, comes from Rav Lichtenstein Riskin, but it really comes from their Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. And it really came from his Rebbe, his grandfather, Rav Chaim Brisker. And it really came from the Netziv, his compatriot, and Rav Chaim Volozhin, his Rebbe. And the Gra, who was his Rebbe, and on, back to the Rambam, back to Rashi, back to Rav, and Ravina Navashi, and on, not in that order. And that's the challenge of this. If you're building a Mishkan, and you're so passionate, and you want to bring fire to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but you lose the Rav that you had in your life, you lose the human source. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu give the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu? Because we can't develop, there's a limit to how much relationship you can develop with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We need an ability to have someone in our lives who's greater than we are, who can be that barest of reminders of the greatness of Torah. And you have to find that in your life, and I think that's the tragedy of Parashat Shemini. And I don't know why, I have my theories in the Olam that we're in, whatever you label you want to give it, Dati Lumi, Modern Orthodoxy, we're struggling with this. There's so many people that don't have a Rav. We have an obligation to figure out a way to change that trend. So that's a little food for thought on the topic. There is a. I will tell you one last thing. Take a look. Something fascinating I never noticed before. I only noticed this year in the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu leaves Mitzrayim, and the Jewish people are with him, right? Does anybody remember how they end up in? In Yom Sof, listen to this pasuk. This is an unbelievable pasuk. Pasuk says it's in Shmot Perek. By the Be'er Shel Moshe Limo, this is Perek Yudalev. It's right before Kriyas Yom Sof, right before the splitting of the sea. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'yashuvu v'yachanu lifnei piachirot b'migdolo v'nayam. Hashem tells Moshe to tell the Jewish people to go back v'yashuvu, to encamp opposite a place called Piachirot. Listen to what Rashi says here. La'achoreihem, letzad Mitzrayim. He tells them to go back towards Egypt. Just think about this. These people have been slaves for 210 years. They finally escaped. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, we're turning around. We're going back. And they just listen. They just listen. That's unbelievable. It's illogical. But if your Rebbe says to you, we're going back, that to me is the definition of a Rav. And you could make a case for saying Cheta Ego, the mistake of the golden calf, is that they don't listen to their leadership. Not only do they not listen, they kill Chura. So somewhere in that balance is the question that we have to think about. Here at Son Hashem should bless us to discover a love for Torah, find people in our lives who can give us that love for Torah. Shabbat Shalom.